Good afternoon, and welcome to Uncle Paul's Jazz Closet, your Monday afternoon show about jazz drummer Paul Modian, music he created, music he inspired, and music he was inspired by. Before I start the show, I want to thank my partner, the Camden Conference, and also the Dowling Walsh Gallery. And the Dowling Walsh Gallery is right on Main Street in Rockland, and it is open Tuesday through Sunday from 10 to 4, so stop by to see different artists' work. Today's show is going to be a talk with Steve Cardenas, and I'm going to play from his new album, which is called Charlie and Paul, and it's all music written by Charlie Hayden and Paul Modian, two musicians who Steve played with quite a bit and was very inspired by. Steve also helped me put together Paul Modian's songbooks, and so I'm sure we'll talk a little bit about that. And I'm going to start off the show with a cut from Steve's album Melody in a Dream, which came out in 2013. And this is with Thomas Morgan, Joey Barron, and Shane Ensley. Actually, Shane is not on the cut I'm going to play. And I'm going to start out the show with Once Around the Park, a Paul Modian tune. And then while that's playing, I'm going to call Steve up on the phone, and hopefully we'll get it all together in 5 minutes. Thank you. that was Steve Cardenas's version of Once Around the Park. Paul Modian's tune from Steve's album, Melody in a Dream. And I think I have Steve on the line. Are you there, Steve?
I'm here.
Okay, good. That sounds good. I'm so excited to finally have you on the show. I keep thinking that I've had you on the show before, just because we've talked so much, but I never have. So,
I know. I'm excited, too.
Oh, good. Good. So do you want to say anything about your version of Once Around the Park, which is very different than anything Paul recorded, I think?
Yeah. When we recorded that, I was intentionally trying to do something different from Paul. I just kind of had it in mind to have Thomas play the melody first. He plays obviously so great, but he also plays so well in tune whenever he plays melody, it just sounds amazing. So, and I also wanted that piece to be, just like a little statement, like we each take a couple of choruses and hand it off to each other, which was kind of really the overall concept of the record, was to have it be conversational and a bit more intimate as a result. You know.
And we didn't really talk about, I didn't really introduce you or anything, so some of our listeners might not be familiar with your music locally. And so you're a guitarist, and you have played the guitar for probably most of your life, right?
Yeah, since I was 14.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's like about 10 years ago. No, just kidding. several decades.
Yeah, and you grew up in Kansas City.
Kansas City. Yeah, and I moved from Kansas City, actually it was 30 years ago, in July. And I went to California first, to the Bay Area, lived there for about 4 years. Uh-huh. And then I lived in Los Angeles for a couple of years, and then I moved to New York in 1995.
Yeah, and so what year was it that you joined the Electric Bebop band, Paul
Moody? That was 1997.
Yeah.
So the first playing I did with that band was a fall tour. It was like late October, I think it started.
Yeah. And you toured quite a bit with the band and did several recordings with them, right?
The band had been together already, I think, for about 5 years. And, you know, depending on who, you know, with that group, there was a lot of people. There were 6 people in the band. And it didn't always work out that when Paul had a block of time for a tour that there might be someone who couldn't do it because of a previous commitment. So that's why there was a rotation of personnel. It wasn't like anybody ever got fired. It was really just more about whoever was available kind of had the gig. And Chris Cheek and I were very much aware of that, and we did our best to just juggle our schedules to try to always make everything.
Yeah. And I was, last week I read a review of the album Europe that was, I think it was Jazzwise magazine, and and they pointed out that the Electric Bebop band, you know, Paul Modian was the only original member still in it.
Yeah, right.
And
that's true.
But that it still had its own distinctive sound, even though the players were rotating out, in and out, and changing all the time, which is I think that's pretty hard to do, I guess. I think Paul had a pretty strong role in it, that he could do that. And
Strong leader role, and, you know, just the way he played really defined the sound of the band. What more can you say? You know, he's one of those musicians that's instantly recognizable. You hear a cymbal, you hear a certain just texture, and you know it's him. And so I think the instrumentation stayed the same until mid 2000s, when it sort of became a different band. But and then, you know, what's even remarkable about what you just said is that when I first joined the group, a lot of the repertoire was I would say, still mostly bebop. So there was a lot of Monk, there was Charlie Parker, Bud Powell, and just maybe one or two of Paul's tunes, but they really, he had kind of made a point with that band to play the bebop and some standards repertoire. And so when Europe came out, that's when he started introducing more of his tunes. And for what he never really said, but maybe he was just feeling like hearing them in a different context would be just kind of my take, I guess.
And also sort of evolving that band. I think he started out, I know in his writings, that he wanted to purposefully introduce the bebop tunes to sort of the younger generation of jazz musicians. Of almost
right.
Almost all of the members were quite a bit younger than Paul. A couple weren't, but most of you were. And I think that, yeah, that was his intention, but it evolved into him writing tunes for that band. And
I think I remember reading an interview even before I joined the band, and when Paul kind of started the band, and you know Paul, he could say some pretty funny stuff, but I think he said, "Yeah, I wanted to start a band. You know, I wanted to play all bebop. I wanted to do it with electric guitars and electric bass because I wanted to destroy bebop. You know,
uh-huh.
Something like that. You know, but you know, when Paul destroys something, it still comes out amazingly beautiful.
Yeah." Yeah, I think he had a different definition of destroy.
Exactly.
Yeah. So I have a couple of things queued up. I have Morpion from Holiday for Strings, and I also have Tangram from the Charlie and Paul, your new album. Got any preference on what we should play next?
Play Morpion.
Okay, so is the album Holiday for Strings, which came out just before or after Europe? I think it was
a year after.
It was a year after.
Yeah.
Okay. And this is Paul's tune, Morpion. So stay tuned, and Steve and I will be back after the song. Thank you. Okay, that was Morpion from Holiday for Strings. And Steve, do you want to say a couple of words about that?
About Morpion. That record, we had recorded that record at the end of the, that was a tour in the, you know, like late fall of 2001. And so we did that at the end of the tour, and we had played a lot of the music on that tour that we thought we were going to record, and we actually did. We probably recorded almost a whole other album's worth of music. And because we had a couple of, well, we had a couple of days slotted, but at any rate, so we started recording, and a lot of them were covers. There were some Herbie Nichols tunes and some Mingus and, you know, things like that. And we got about, let's say, just, you know, several hours into the recording session. And Paul, he stopped in the middle of one of the tunes, and he said, "Hey, you know, these I'm not because you know when we were on the road, he wasn't using his own drums and his own cymbals. He just says, 'I'm not really happy with these drums and these cymbals. I don't think they sound good with the music that we're playing. So pull out.' He goes, 'I think my tunes will sound better with this setup.' And we and so we started just calling tunes of his that we had in the book, but we had maybe played once or twice. And some of them we had been playing on the road, but at any rate, Morpion, I think we had been playing that one. But there's tunes on Holiday for Strings like Endgame. I think we had only read through that once. Arabesque, I think we played maybe a couple of times. But so actually, I mean, we just, you know, we took a left in the middle of the recording session and recorded basically the whole album of Holiday for Strings, second half of the session. And I think it was, I mean, I gotta say, I feel like Paul's instincts were very right on that. It just, I remember even when we were starting to record those tunes, how much better it felt.
Uh-huh.
And, yeah, so that was an interesting thing to experience, you know, somebody just really like saying, "Nah, we got to do this.
Yeah, that kind of, now that brings me around to the CD that I found of a live recording, so of the Electric Bebop Band in spring of 2002, and it said, and it was tucked into a plastic sleeve in the back of one of Paul's copies of Holiday for Strings, so
uh-huh.
I'm assuming that maybe Stefan Winter put it there? I don't know. I mean, it's actually, like, you know, embedded in the case. So,
yeah.
So yeah, maybe you can,
you know,
remember
I can
when it was done. It's with you and Jakob Bro on guitars.
Right. The only thing, I mean, all I can do is speculate, but here's a pretty good speculation. With that tour, the first concert we did was in Vicenza, Italy, and it was a special concert that I don't know if it was I can't remember if it was either promoter or a music arranger that was connected with that promoter, an Italian music arranger that wanted to replicate the Monk at Town Hall concert with the Electric Bebop Band being kind of the core group, and then he added like other instruments to fill out, because it was a big band. It was Monk, you know, Thelonious Monk Orchestra at Town Hall. So I can't remember how many more instruments, because we were already six, so he might have added four or five other instruments.
But would the songs be?
They're all, I mean, if it's that concert, it's going to be the tunes that were recorded at Town, and they're all Monk's tunes.
Oh, yeah, no.
And he did it in order, like the same order. It was kind of like this kind of thing, you know?
Yeah. No, this starts out with your tune, Roundup, and...
oh, wow. Okay, well, then I'm completely off.
Yeah, so, and then and you do play a bunch of Monk, Gallops, Gallop, Brilliant Corners, and
Oscar
T.
Wow.
And then it ends with a short drum music. And Holiday for Strings is on there, and Arabesque, Look to the Black Wall.
Oh, okay.
It never entered my mind.
That just sounds to me like that it was just maybe one of our gigs that was recorded off the board.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe Paul just tucked it in somewhere that he knew it would be safe.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it is one of those. It doesn't, usually he makes a note in his book like, in his schedule book like that this was recorded or, I couldn't really see that he did that. I took a quick look, but I'll have to look again and see. Okay, so that's good to know. So let's talk a little bit about your new album, Charlie and Paul, for, is it Nouvelle? Is that how you say it? Nouvelle Records?
Right. Yeah. Nouvelle.
Pretty interesting outfit. I looked at their website, and it's a subscription. People make a subscription, and then they get a new album every 2 months, and they're exclusive recordings done for that label, right?
Yes, exactly. I'll try to condense the explanation along with the story of how the record came about. But it's a subscription series, and they do vinyl only. And whoever is the band leader, the agreement is that you allow them to release they release the record as vinyl only, no digital, no CDs, no downloads or anything. And then they make it part of the subscription series. After a couple of years, they hand over the masters to the band leader, and then the band leader can do whatever they want. If they want to re-release it as a digital release, then they can do that. So I had done a couple of records for them as a sideman. The first one was with Ben Allison and Ted Nash, music of Jim Hall and Jimmy Giuffre. Then the next year, John Coward, the pianist that plays in Brian Blade's Fellowship, did a record with them, and that was me and Tony Shear and Brian Blade played drums. So after that, that was done in two. Anyway, I'm not going to try to figure out exactly what year. So Elon Mailer is the main producer, who's at the recording sessions, and he sounded me out even at the end of John Coward's session, just saying, "Boy, I'd like to get you in here to do your own project." Great, just let me know. So, like about 6 months later, he got in contact and said, "Would really like to do a project, and if you don't mind me suggesting, how would you feel about recording the music of Paul Motion and Charlie Hayden?" And of course, I wrote back and said, "As ideas go, that's a really good one."
Yeah.
You know, it's funny because I was very excited to do that. It's not necessarily something I would have thought of to do, but maybe down the road more.
Uh-huh.
Charlie and Paul haven't been gone that long, you know, and for whatever reason, maybe I was just feeling like it was too soon. But I think I had that sort of in the back of my mind for later on.
Yeah.
But since Elon was suggesting it, it just seemed like, why not? So we started talking about musicians, and he kind of had certain people in mind, and I think he knew, they were people that played with Charlie or both Charlie and Paul, and musicians that I'd played with a lot as a result. So the players on the record, Lauren Stillman on alto, Thomas Morgan on bass, and Matt Wilson on drums. And even though we hadn't played as a quartet, I knew that it would probably feel great and sound like a band just because we had played so much together with not only Charlie and Paul, but in some other situations. So, and my assumptions were right. It felt really great, and I'm really happy with how that record turned out.
Yeah, it's a beautiful sounding album, and the package of it, the album cover and the album itself is it's really high quality and nice. I like it.
Yeah, they do really great work. Really take a lot of care in how they put all that together.
Yeah, so I have queued up Tangram, a Palmodian cut from the album. And it's a tune that Paul never recorded. And so we'll talk about that more after we play it. So okay. Here's Tangram.
Thank you.
That was a cut from Steve Cardenas's album Charlie and Paul, which is only available through Nouvelle Records subscription this year, but keep your ears out, because in a couple of years Steve will be able to release it himself. So it's really great, all the music of Charlie Hayden and Paul Modian. Steve, did you want to talk about how you chose the tunes for that?
Yeah, we had a couple of rehearsals before we recorded, but Thomas was on the road, so he couldn't make those. But the first rehearsal specifically was to just kind of decide what we wanted to play. And, you know, from working on the books with you and Bill, I had all of Paul's charts. So that was lucky me, you know. But with Charlie's, even though I played in Liberation Music Orchestra for a long time, those tunes, you know, with that band, it was a 12-piece group, so it's, you know, each part, I mean, we were playing parts, we didn't have lead sheets, so I didn't have a complete, you know, piece of music with the melody and the chords and, you know, all the information. So I thought, well, maybe I can contact Ruth, but then I just started listening to Charlie's tunes and thought, you know, I'm just going to see how far I get with transcribing some of this stuff. And I felt like I was getting things down pretty well. And so we played them at rehearsal, and I had more than I needed of both Charlie and Paul's music. And what it's just like a lot of, you know, before you're recording, you play through stuff, and it becomes reasonably evident maybe which tunes feel the best or what you know, becomes apparent which ones to record. But with Paul's, what we started feeling pretty quickly was the tunes that he hadn't recorded himself felt particularly intriguing. And maybe that was just because we didn't have any other recording, you know, that we were referencing in our minds, that, you know, another version that would, not that that would have stopped us, because we did actually record, you know, a few tunes that he had recorded before, but we did three that he hadn't, and those were Tangrim, Prairie Avenue Cowboy, and Riff Raff. And so, yeah, it was pretty cool, and felt like we could kind of do our thing with them.
Yeah. And yeah, that's what I hoped people would do with those unrecorded cuts, some of which were really new. That I don't know if he's a couple of those he may never have even got to play with a band at all. But
well, you have some tapes. Yeah, you have some rehearsal, there's that funny version of Prairie Avenue Cowboy where Paul's cracking up, you know.
Yeah, I think he wrote that for Bill, and his cowboy guitar playing.
Right.
And,
but, you know, it was Matt Wilson's idea to kind of, because I remember when we were kind of running it, looking at it and playing through it a little, and Matt said, why don't we play this instead of as an up-tempo kind of country tune, why don't we play it more like a country ballad? And it just seemed, the moment we tried, it was like, yeah, this is definitely it, you know.
For Prairie Avenue Cowboy.
Yeah.
You know, I have that, I queued that up for, maybe we should play that, and then we'll come back to what we talked about before.
Sure.
So. Okay, so this is Prairie Avenue Cowboy. Thank you. Started a little bit there with the next tune, but before that it was Tangram, a Palmodian tune that never went on an official recording of Paul's, but I did have some rehearsal tapes from it. Steve, do you want to say anything about that tune? Anything more about Tangram?
Oh, about 10, because we just listened to Prairie Avenue Cowboy.
Oh, I meant, yeah, that's what I meant, no. Sorry.
Oh, okay. I played acoustic steel string on that, and I think I know on the vinyl record there's two tunes where I'm playing steel string, one of Paul's tunes and one of Charlie's, for Taria, Charlie's tune for Taria. But there's two other tunes that aren't on the vinyl that, you know, when I really want to release it after a couple of years digitally, so I'll include those tunes.
Oh,
What ones are those? For the Love of Sarah, uh-huh. Paul's tune, and then another of Charlie's tunes called There in a Dream, which I played acoustic on. So I really had it in mind to do it, you know, just a few tunes on acoustic for, not just because I love that sound and I thought these tunes would sound great, but both Paul and Charlie loved acoustic guitar. I've heard them both say it. I've read them talking about it. So I just, that was just part of kind of honoring their thing, you know, also.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, do you want to maybe say something about how you started playing with Paul and then you started playing with Charlie? And
oh, yeah. Well, Paul, I was in 1997, I was playing a lot on the road with Madeline Peru. Do you know of her, the singer?
No, I don't.
She at the time, she had just had a record come out, and she was being she kind of made a bit of a splash at the time because she sounded a lot like Billie Holiday, at least that was all the press buzz and everything, and she did have those qualities, although I felt like they were kind of working that angle a little too hard because I felt like she had her own sound as well. But anyway, so I was on the road and with her, and it was summer, and I remember, without getting into too much of a backstory, Paul had called me for a one-off at the Knitting Factory the previous year, but I was out of town and I couldn't do it, and I felt really bad about it, and I thought, well, that was probably my only shot. He'll probably never call back, you know.
Missed opportunity.
My roommate at the time, I was going on the road, and I left my itinerary. You know, this is before cell phones, and so I left my itinerary just, you know, with all where we were going to be on the road, and I just said, hey, you know, if anybody calls for a gig, just, you know, let me know who it was, or you can give them any information you want, just because I don't want to miss, because I was starting to feel like I really need to make sure I don't miss out on things just because I'm gone for a while. Anyway, I remember I was in Norway, and we had a day off, and I got back to the hotel after going for this walk with the bass player Don Falzone, and we went up to the desk, and desk handed me a note, said, you got a call. Okay, and then it said Paul Motion. I said, Paul Motion tracked me down here. And I put it together. Oh, yeah, my roommate must have given him my number. That's crazy that he called, you know. So I, you know, waited, because I knew that, well, 6-hour time change, so I waited till the evening, give him a call, and he picked up, and he just, he said, "Oh yeah, you know, I just wanted to see if you could do this tour in the fall of 97," which I thought, you know, wow, he's never even heard me play, and he's just asking me. But, you know, that really was the way Paul, he just went on recommendations, and he trusted that, because I don't think it ever really, it never worked against him. You know, he always felt like it was pretty solid thing to do, so.
Yeah, and I think he was mellow about it. Like, if it didn't work out, he just, like, didn't play with that person again, or,
right.
You know?
Yeah. I don't think he thought of it as a big gamble, you know, that kind of thing. And so he said, can you let me know if I just said, you know, I'm free. I knew I was free, but I also knew that Madeline's manager might have some work for the fall, but I didn't care because Paul was exactly what I wanted to be doing, you know, playing that music, playing with him, the people in the band, all of that, you know. So, and then it turned out that, you know, about a month later, Madeline's manager said, well, it was crazy. He said, we've got a 3-month tour where we're, you know, going to be the warm-up band for Sarah McLachlan. And I said, okay. I said, I can do everything but these 3 weeks. And he said, well, you could probably have to do all of it or none of it. And I said, okay, great. I can help you find somebody. I wasn't going to give up playing with Paul. I didn't care what the stakes were.
Okay, I'm going to go to a cut to take us to the top of the hour, just because.
Okay.
So this is your tune, New Moon from Europe, and
right.
You said this is the first time you recorded it.
Right.
And then we'll play the same tune from one of your own albums after the top of the hour. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.